History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know they don't have to go untold. And perhaps you'll have an opportunity this week as your family gathers for the holidays to ask a few questions of some of the elders in your family. If you're patient enough to listen and show them you care, you never know what they might share. Our goal has always been to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price has been paid for our freedom. And in that process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves truly touched and genuinely inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Over the years, we've heard many a World War II veteran bring up memories from wartime Christmases on the radio. From Christmas plays in POW camps to special Christmas dinners on the front lines to waking up on a hospital ship on Christmas after surviving the most devastating typhoon in history, those memories provide perspective as we gather with our loved ones this holiday season. Today's program will be a special Christmas edition, and I don't mean to make it too heavy for you right out of the gate, but to underscore how those of us who didn't serve sometimes can't imagine how something might affect someone who did, we're going to begin with a haunting memory shared by Navy veteran Mike Wanty, who survived countless close calls aboard the destroyer USS Lardner.
Are there some times that you look back on when you were on the Lardner and you remember what happened and you can picture it in your mind and you ask yourself, how did I survive that? Or maybe say, well, hey, I was pretty fortunate to survive that.
There is one, and I don't like to talk about it. And if I do tell you, I may crack in talking about it, but I'll tell you, it happened at Christmas time. This is why I hate Christmas.
Still today, 70 years later, you hate Christmas.
In a way, I don't know if I can tell you or not. It happened at Bougainville. We helped the Marines go ashore, and then the bodies started coming back, and they would come back in baskets. And one of the, you shouldn't have done this. This boy, they put on the wardroom table. He had no arms, no legs, and he was burned over most of his body. And all we could do was give him morphine, and he wanted to hear White Christmas all the time. It was a record. He would play over and over and over and over. And it took us about 10 hours, I guess, to get to a forward hospital on Vella La Vella. And the doctor said to me, he says, I won't let him die, Mike. I'll get him ashore. And he did, but he died once he got there. But he didn't die on the ship. I've always felt bad. I never got his name or his father and mother. I've always wanted to write to her. He was about 17, Marine, nice young guy.
It's okay. I'm sorry, Mike.
You don't realize. It happens if I ever think about it. And at Christmas time, it's double. They keep playing White Christmas. I've gotten used to it. But to talk about it, it's different.
But over the years, if you're somewhere and White Christmas comes
you
on,
you never can forget it.
You said your whole life you've wished you had gotten his name so you could have written his mother. What do you think you would have written to his mother? What would you have told her?
That he was brave and he thought of his family. He was a farm boy. I think from Ohio, I don't know. But I've always regretted that I didn't get his name and address.
Believe it or not, Mike Wanty isn't the only World War II vet to have shared on this program that that particular song, White Christmas, which gave hope to so many servicemen abroad, brought back nothing but horrific memories because of the timing of when it came on the radio and what they happened to be witnessing at the time. When it comes to Christmas memories in World War II, many of the most prominent center around Christmas 1944 because it was the thick of the Battle of the Bulge. We've met several who were captured during that time period, including Leonard Cosby, who on Christmas Eve 1944 was manning an Allied roadblock on frozen terrain along the perimeter of the Battle of the Bulge.
Some German soldiers sneaked up and started shooting at us. They couldn't get a direct shot into where we were, so they were shooting at an angle. And on our right side was a wooden, kind of like a garage, where they had parked something inside the garage. This German was shooting at us. They had some tracer bullets in with their ammunition, and the tracer bullet would hit the side of this wooden garage and stick there and fry. They didn't last long, just a few seconds, and they went out. That was the only time they came up there attempting to shoot us or shoot at us. And to this day, I can't understand why they didn't throw a hand grenade or something in there at us.
You're not complaining that they didn't.
Oh, no. No, fortunately, I made it through it in fine shape.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's additional vehicles coming up the road, so we had two bazooka shells. We had already used one. So now it's time to use the other one. And I moved up on the ridge and loaded the bazooka gun and fired it. And when a bazooka shell hits metal, out the other side of the metal will be flying molting metal. When I fired the bazooka gun, I could hear some German soldiers down there screaming and hollering. And after that, we didn't hear much of anything from them. There was no firing at us or anything. And I guess that must have been about, maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
And how many people are with you here?
There's 3 of us in that roadblock.
3 of us. So this is not a well-fortified position. You don't have a lot of reinforcements. You guys are out there on your own.
Right. And there's really not much of anything around us to protect us either.
And you have no idea how many Germans are out there?
No.
So it's 3 in the morning.
And one of the fellows became excited, and I guess he was a little bit hysterical. He said, boy, he said, we're going to have to do something. It's going to be daylight here before you know it, and when it gets light, the Germans are going to come in here and kill us all. He said, we're going to have to give up. And I said, well, that might be all right. But I said, who's going to walk out in the middle of the road to give up?
Mm-hmm.
And I was standing down near the front of our position there, and this guy just pushed me right out in the middle of the road. So I started yelling, comrade, comrade.
And this is about daybreak or what?
Well, I'd say it's about 3 o'clock or 3:30 in the morning.
So you didn't want to wait till the sun came up?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, he was afraid that they would come in there and tear us to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So, fortunately, I don't know why the Germans didn't start shooting, but they took all 3 of us as prisoners and took us down to a German officer who questioned us as to what organization we were in, what unit we were in, and how long we had been there.
Not very long.
No.
Didn't have much to tell them, did you? Not that you would have anyway.
No. Well, I'm sure they knew. Mm-hmm. The organization we were in, what division and all.
Emotionally, what was that like? Because here you have put in all this time and training, not to mention your brother going in with you, and you're going over there to win a war. And now all of a sudden, you've had this intense experience where you didn't know if you were going to die, and here you are surrendering, not knowing what the future holds. That seems like an awful lot to try to process in a 19-year-old brain.
Well, I didn't know what to expect from the Germans or where they would take us, but they had us marching for a ways, and then they put us on trucks and hauled us back into Germany.
Where he would spend the next 4 months in captivity, and he was not alone. More than 23,000 Americans became prisoners of war during the Battle of the Bulge, and the division with the most, the 106th Infantry Division. Mac McMullen was one of them.
We were captured late in the evening and marched down the hill. And they got a little town called Belief, B-E-L-I-E-F or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They congregated us there, put us in column, and so many abreast, and started down there. didn't stay abreast very long. It was just a mess. At least see on the movies, you know, confusion.
And was there talk among your ranks of guys trying to go out on their own, make a break for it, avoid capture and captivity?
Not at that point. We weren't sure. We didn't know what we were doing. We were just surrounded. That's the night I got my feet wet. I got both feet wet, and I didn't have combat boots because they didn't have my size. So I got the regular shoe, and I tried to go through a little stream where you jump across. I got both feet wet and got them frozen. Mm-hmm. And later on, as things went on, because we walked that particular time, we walked the middle of that afternoon, all that night, all the next day, and then before we stopped. And by the time we got there, my feet were frozen, and I was at the point where this is where I couldn't make it anymore. And this is when I went to church and Sunday school and all that, but I was one of these guys that prayed for a bicycle or something like that. And I was holding back, saving that, I guess. I didn't know it. But I prayed that just give me one more half mile. Just give me one more half mile. And then I got to where I was getting ready to drop out. And somebody I don't know, never saw him before. I've never seen him since. He was a big guy. He grabbed me by on his shoulder or arm, and he helped me, and with him and some other help, I got there through the night, and the next day, but that was tough because I was ready to drop out. I just couldn't go anymore.
And for our listeners, tell us what that would have meant if you would have dropped out. You would have been left for dead, or maybe
they might shoot me or to make sure I wasn't playing games with them, and so that they didn't. No, they didn't. I'd have frozen. My feet were already frozen. I couldn't go anywhere.
You know? So you thought that was it?
Yep, that was as close as I've ever come.
And a desperate prayer was answered, and a big, strapping fellow American who.
Right.
And who knows? Who knows who he was? Huh?
I don't know. Never saw him. It was in the middle of the night. And he, I didn't ask him. He saw me stumbling and heading for the edge of the column and grabbed me and says, "Hang in there." And we, the two of us, stumbled along. You've seen it in the movies, and that's the way it is.
I've had so many prisoners of war repeat to me the POW motto of "We help those who can't help themselves." And there was someone who helped you when you couldn't help yourself. How many times over the years have you thought back to that when someone needed help from you?
I've been there.
I can tell it's still powerful for you, and I certainly understand why. So you made it through that night.
We wept all that night, and then the next day, and then they finally let us stop, give us a rest. And then some of us were in a schoolhouse, some of us were in a church, a barn, whatever, because there wasn't any facilities. It was just where you could flop, and we spent that night there. And then the next day, we were in a little town called Gerolstein, Gerolstein, or something like that. And they loaded us on boxcars at that time.
And this is the famous 40 and 8?
Mm-hmm.
40 people or 8 horses, but I'm sure they stuck a lot more than 40 in there.
60.
Uh-huh.
You couldn't, what you did, you sat down with your knees up, and then the guy got behind you and his back to yours with the same. And if you got into that position, everybody got in that position, you could all sit down at one time. Otherwise, you couldn't.
And you probably needed that for some body heat, too, right?
The heat came from the manure. It was in the boxcar. There was about 8-10 inches of manure in the boxcar. And us city boys didn't know how many BTUs there were on a pound of horse manure. but it was because the next day... couple of guys, when they would let us out to relieve ourselves, and there was no water, so we'd be eating some snow. And a couple of them asked if they could shovel this stuff out, the manure out. Well, man, when that part where the car, where these jokers got rid of the manure, was frozen just like the.
Never thought you'd be wishing for horse manure.
No,
huh?
No.
And this sounds like a miserable existence. I mean, certainly the uncertainty could eat you alive, if not the freezing temperatures and just the agony of really not having any sustenance.
We hadn't eaten. When we got captured, we hadn't eaten for 2 days. They just had to bring the chow up to us because when we were by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Jeep didn't get there for 2 days before we were captured. Mm-hmm. So we still didn't have anything to eat until, well, I guess it would be the second day. They give us a loaf of bread for five guys, mm-hmm. one of their brown breads that they make out of
sawdust. Tree flour.
Yeah.
It's time for our first break, but when this special Christmas edition of the program continues, another survivor of the Battle of the Bulge who experienced his own personal Christmas miracle. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 1,800 veterans will have seen their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.